Healthcare Today is produced and paid for by the Radio Vermont Group. We welcome listener feedback. Email your comments to wdev@radiovermont.com. Healthcare Today with Dr. Lewis Myers, a weekly exploration of health and wellness topics affecting Vermonters. Brought to you in part by Westview Meadows and the Gary Residence, retirement living the way it's meant to be. Age Well Vermont, the leading experts and advocates for older adults in northwestern Vermont. Northfield Pharmacy, pharmacy care with a personalized hometown touch. Northfieldpharmacy.com. And Kinney Drugs and KinneyDrugs.com, employee-owned and locally committed. Your participation is encouraged. Call with your questions, 244-1777 or 877-291-8255.
Good afternoon. I'm Dr. Lewis Myers, and welcome to Healthcare Today. Our topic today is headaches, and this is a condition that practically every person experiences at some point in their life. Headaches come in all sizes and shapes and range from mild and annoying to life-threatening, and are also one of the most common reasons why people go to see a primary care provider. In addition, migraine headaches, which commonly occur from the 20s, age 20s to the 50s, can lead to significant loss of productive life and family activities. We're going to welcome today Dr. Sinlin Thomas Chang, who is a neurologist at the Massachusetts General Hospital's Headache and Neuropathic Pain Clinic in Boston, Massachusetts, and he's on the phone with us today from Boston. Dr. Chang will be discussing the diagnosis, treatment, and the prevention of headaches. As always, your calls certainly are appreciated and welcome. If you have any questions for our guest today on headaches, we're at 802-244-1777. Again, that's 802-244-1777. Let me just introduce Dr. Chang. It will take a moment to tell you about all that he has accomplished thus far. He is one of those doctors. He has an MD degree from Taipei Medical University in 1991 and subsequently got a PhD in neuroscience from the University of Michigan. He did a postdoctoral fellowship in neurology at the University of Michigan. He did his internship at Detroit Medical Center and his residency in neurology at Wayne State University in Michigan, Detroit. He did postdoctoral fellowships in pain and palliative care at the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York City and a postdoctoral fellowship in pharmacology at the Weill Medical College of Cornell University. He is an assistant professor currently in neurology at Harvard Medical School, and he is the director of the Headache and Neuropathic Pain Unit at the Mass General Hospital. Should also note that he does do some work each week in pharmacology for pharmacology review for Pfizer Pharmaceuticals. Dr. Chang, welcome to our show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we're going to talk about headaches, and I thought we might start by simply describing what different types of headaches. When we say headache, it's not one generic category. It can mean a lot of different things. Can you tell us about some of the more common forms of headaches?
Yes. A headache has a wide range of variety of disease. Mostly, headaches are associated with pain in the head area, as the headache means. Typically, when we look at a headache, we don't look at just pain. We look at the cause of this. Now, we can simply divide the headache to a primary headache and a secondary headache. Primary headache means this is a headache happen without any structure, any known cause, which is happen mostly naturally because of not a neurological condition that could cause the headache. And then the secondary headache is the headache caused by a structural occupying lesion or other known cause of the headache, which such as injuries, accidents, medication cause, or any known cause of the headache. So we divide it because we can treat a headache accordingly to the cause and then to get rid of the headache efficiently.
So when someone comes into your clinic, and I'm guessing by the time they come to your clinic, they've already seen primary care doctor and maybe a neurologist in their own community. But when someone comes into your headache clinic, what are some of the first questions that you ask them?
Just as Dr. Mayer said, we don't see a simple headache in our clinic because most of our patients have seen primary care, maybe see other neurologists, or even headache specialists. So the question we ask patient first to see is, will be what is the factors that affect your headache? And that will be the first question we ask, because that will determine the cause and then the treatment options we offer to these patients.
What are some of the ways in which people describe their headaches? What are some of the common things that you hear about when they try and describe what it feels like?
Patients don't come to our clinic for they have an occasional headache. Most people come to our clinic because they have intractable headache or daily headache, which is not relieved by regular use medications. So very commonly, there's other factors affecting the headache that cause the headache so intractable. So what our job is try to dig into the history to determine what's the major factors that trigger the headache or worsen the headache. So we typically do a very extensive history taking from the origin of a headache and how frequent the headache was, and then when did the headache get worse, and what kind of treatment has the patient received, and then what kind of imaging studies has the patient get. And then after that, we are going to perform a neurologic examination, checking for anything we can find on the exam, to indicating there could be a secondary cause of headache. And then we can generate a treatment plan, which is individualized to each patient to achieve the best result.
If someone, we'll take it back a step or two. If someone goes in to see their primary care provider with a headache, so this is before they eventually reach you, what are some of the tests that you would recommend that primary care providers think about ordering?
Yes. First of all, we are looking for red flags, which indicating the patient is at great risk of getting higher morbidity and mortality. One red flag would be when the patient has a new headache after age of 50. That's usually indicating the headache could be secondary from something serious.
So if someone over 50 years old goes to their primary care provider and says that they have never really had headaches before and now they're starting to get headaches, that's a concern.
That's correct. So 50 is pretty much the age we determine if this is most likely to be a secondary headache. The patient younger than 50 is most likely they have like a migraine, a tension type headache. That's not of concern that much. Over 50s, there's more concern of either neck issues causing cervicogenic headache, or there could be a vascular condition that causing more headache, as well as there could be other structural lesions such as a brain tumor that could be the cause of this.
So you mentioned a moment ago under 50, it's more likely to be tension versus possible migraine headaches. Can you talk a little bit about what is a tension headache and then differentiate that from what is a migraine headache?
Yes, they are quite different, but a lot of times they are mixed. So tension headache typically people usually say, oh, I have a headache, I have a mild headache, typically like a squeezing headache, pressure-like headache, like a valve around the head. Most people can still function. They can still finish their work. They can still do their activities, without disrupting their daily life. And what they do is they usually take aspirin or Tylenol, ibuprofen, and then rest, and then the headache typically better. Migraine is very different. So migraine typically stops patients from doing activities. Migraine has more symptoms such as nausea, vomiting. They could be very nauseous and light noise sensitivities. They cannot walk under the light. You need to hide in the dark. They frequently have other symptoms, pounding headache, usually on one sided, but could be bilateral, that could stop them from working.
Are the underlying causes of migraine headache different than tension headache?
Yeah, they're both primary headaches, so, which means they usually don't have other significant structural cause of this. Most commonly, migraine is associated with hormonal or genetic factors. So basically, which means happen more common in women who is you know after the teenage years they start having migraines, and then those typically will improve after menopause. For the hormonal migraines, those are common migraines we see with the younger patients, and then tension headaches different. Tension headache could happen equally to both male and female, and then they come with no structural cause, but most people complain about stress. A lot of times, this patient has tension headache, have muscle issues on the neck and shoulders. They could have other joint issues in the neck or in the jaw. So the treatment is quite different for this two different kind of headache. Believe it or not, tension headaches is even actually more common than the migraine.
Tension headaches are more common than migraine.
Yeah, exactly. Tension headache is the most common type of headache type. Most people live with it, and it doesn't bother them that much. But migraine is the primary reason for patients seeking medical assistance when they have this kind of headache. They can't function. That's typically the factors that draw people to the clinic to see their doctors.
So you mentioned that migraine headaches are far more common in women, whereas tension headaches occur in both men and women fairly equally.
Yes.
So that suggests that maybe hormonal or estrogen plays a role. Do we know the role that estrogen plays in perhaps leading to migraines?
Yes, there are studies shows it's not the estrogen level that causing the migraine, it's the change of estrogen level. Such as that before the menstrual period, the estrogen level drops. And then that drop causing the headache. That happened to people taking the birth control pills too. So they take a birth control pill, they have a high energy level, estrogen level, and then when they those blank days, they start having a headache because they don't get estrogen on those days, and the estrogen level drop, and that causing the headache. So it's very common. We call this menstrual headache is hormonal or estrogen related.
So people who are on birth control pills or contraceptives, which include estrogen, are more at risk for getting migraine headaches?
If they use blank pills in those days, they don't take estrogen, they only take blank pills, they are prone to have a headache during those days. But some people with migraine, they take estrogen without blank days, or they do every 3 months. And those days, they take estrogen, might help reduce the headache from estrogen withdrawal or drop. And then they could still have an estrogen-related headache on the day of blanks when they don't take estrogen. So that's pretty obvious. So estrogen, the drop of estrogen level is the main cause of a hormone-related headache.
So that's something that a younger or older woman who is suffering migraines, which tend to occur most commonly just before her menstrual period, would want to talk to her gynecologist, perhaps, as well as other primary care provider, see if there can be some adjustment.
Yes, there's also concern about estrogen use with people with migraine because estrogen tends to increase the risk of getting stroke for people with migraine, especially older than 30. So we typically recommend people who have migraine don't take estrogen. If not, if they don't need to, they can try to use something else, such as a progestin only oral contraceptive pills or hormones that help regulating their menstrual cycle. If they have to use estrogen, we recommend use the low dose estrogen, either 35 microgram or less a day to help their hormonal issues, so help reduce the risk of stroke.
Well, that's a very important point that you're saying, which is that women who get migraine headaches, you recommend against estrogen-type oral contraception or using the lowest dose possible. Now, you mentioned the risk of potential stroke with migraines. That is probably something which differentiates tension headaches from migraines. Can you talk a little bit more about the connection between migraines and stroke?
Yes. So migraine is a vascular condition. When the patient has migraine, the vessel, blood vessel in their brain, first constrict and then dilate. So when they constrict, the blood vessel can constrict, their diameter gets smaller. So reduce the blood flow to the brain. So if people have, for example, other risk factor for stroke, they could actually have a stroke from the migraine. So that's why we call this a migraineous infarction, or if simply just a stroke, even with sometimes without a headache. So that's why we determine migraine increased risk of stroke, especially in older patients. They have other risk factors for stroke, such as smoker or cardiovascular conditions or diabetes. Let's increase them, adding to the risk of getting a stroke with they already have a migraine history.
So if you're able to treat the migraines or in some way prevent them, you may actually be reducing the risk of stroke.
Exactly. So the treatment of migraines focusing on stabilizing the blood vessels. So you don't have this kind of a constricting dilatation phenomenon. That also could reduce the risk of stroke on the blood vessel instability.
So you mentioned tension headaches tend to be and sometimes more related to musculoskeletal inflammation or tension. Is there any vascular component to tension headaches?
Usually not. Most people's tension headache, they might have tight muscles on the neck and shoulder, or temporal or jaw muscles. They could have tenderness on those muscles. So people usually have some kind of tender spots, and then they tell you if you massage those spots, they tend to get relief. That's typical type of headache, from tension headache. This headache is typically, as you just said, don't really stop people from working. So people typically just take a hot shower, just exercise or relax and take a nap. The headache usually improves. And the tension headache typically responds to over-the-counter medication, aspirin, Tylenol, ibuprofen, and then they don't really need to come to see a doctor for that.
Okay. Let's talk then more about migraines. So you mentioned that they're most common anywhere from the 20s to the 50s. Do people age out of migraine headaches sometimes?
Yes. Yes. If there is a migraine, the hormonal related from estrogen, it typically could resolve after menopause. So when the estrogen level stabilized after menopause, the migraine tends to improve.
How about for men?
For men, the same thing. So the men typically don't get that much migraine, but their migraine could get improved when they get older because of other, their men also have estrogen in their system. But most of the patients with men with migraine, they might not be estrogen related. They could have other factors such as genetic or some kind of lifestyle factors that cause migraine. Those assumptions need to be looked at, too.
Let's talk about the genetics of headaches, in particular migraines. If you have a parent or sibling who has migraines, how much more risk are you for developing a migraine pattern?
There's an increasing risk if you have a first degree or second degree relative has migraine. For the first degree, you could have 30% more or second degree could have like a 15 to 20% more risk getting migraines compared to people who have no family histories. So there is a condition with a genetic mutation that could cause a condition called familial hemiplegic migraine. So this is the migraine when they have attack, they have half their body paralyzed. So it's associated with a mutation in the gene that causing the dysfunction in their blood vessels. That also could be a familial, which means in the family. Those are something, if we see that, we are looking for genetic studies to identify the types. There are at least three different types of familial hemiplegic migraines. Sometimes they might not be family related, so they could be sporadic. And then we can identify the mutation in this individual, but not in their family members. So some could be a new mutation, but if we have patients who have hemiplegic migraines, we need to do some genetic studies.
Even if you can identify a genetic link to family members, does that make any difference in the treatment?
The treatment will be similar. Of course, we can really change the gene these days, but that's something people are working on, doing some genetic therapy on people with these mutations. But at this moment, we know certain medication could help this condition. So if we know this mutation associated with migraine, we can select a medication which work best for this type of headache.
So migraines patterns have some definitions. So, for example, if someone gets one headache a year, even if it's migraine type, would they still be considered a migraine headache? Or how do we define chronic migraines, I should ask?
Oh, yes. Migraine, we define it a migraine to chronic migraine based on the frequency of for the headache. So for people with chronic migraines, the definition is they should have greater than 15 days of headache per month, which include 8 of migraine days. So which means that they could have 7 days of headache with such as tension type of headache. So the combination of both, if the days add up to more than 15 days per month, that's for at least 3 months in their life. And that would suggest a patient has chronic migraine.
Day of headache can be miserable. It's hard to imagine 15 days a month of these kind of headaches. It must really affect people's lives.
Yes. Unfortunately, that's the most common diagnosis we made in our clinic. So because many people suffer from that.
So let's talk about some of the treatments for migraine headaches. Maybe historically, what was one of the first effective treatments that we found?
So there are two different kinds of treatment we typically offer to patients. One is preventive treatments, and the other was abortive treatments. Preventive treatments means you take a medication every day, and then you can reduce the number of migraines by taking the medication every day to prevent it, headache from happening. And abortive treatments means you take a medication when you have migraines. All depends on the number of days. You take the abortive medication on those days.
What are some of the medications that can help people prevent migraines?
Yes, so there are different lines. So we there's a guideline from different associations. They are based on the evidence from the studies, which demonstrating there are first line treatments, which is most effective treatments and less likely to cause some complications. Those first-line treatments including some of the anticonvulsants. Most commonly is called topiramate, another class is called tricyclic antidepressants. Could be a medication called amitriptyline or nortriptyline. And then the third class of medication, first-line, would be beta blockers. People use that for blood pressure, but also if a good preventive medication for migraine. And then there are some other medications might be useful for preventing the migraine, such as even a regular NSAID, such as ibuprofen, naproxen. It could be useful for the preventive medications.
Do you have a personal favorite among those you just mentioned?
We typically determine the medication based on patient's individual or personal factors, such as a patient with stress or depression. We typically would prescribe the antidepressant first, or the first line. Patient with history of seizures or any other conditions that could relate to brain dysfunction, we typically use the anticonvulsants. For people with blood pressure issues or people they tend to have increased heartbeats or rapid heartbeats, anxiety, we choose beta blockers. So those are the different ways we choose medications accordingly.
And you find that people do get some relief?
The way we do this is we try one of the first-time medications. If it doesn't work well, such as causing side effects or doesn't help the headache, we switch to different first-line medications until we find the most effective one.
We hear a lot about or heard about headache diaries. Is that important?
Yes, the headache diary determine the headache types. So typically, as you might remember, we talk about the numbers of headache per month. That typically is from the headache diary. So you need to have a diary to record the 3 months of headache frequencies to help us understand what kind of headache you have. And then also, headache diary not just record the frequencies, also the intensities, and then medication use, and then how well the medication works, and then and how long did migraine last. So that gives us a full idea about how to treat you. So that will be very informative and helpful for the doctors to decide what to do for the next
And
step.
I think it also introduces how important it is that this be a team effort between your patient and the doctor, because it's not simply the patient being prescribed medications. They're an active part of their own treatment, and keeping the diary monitoring symptoms carefully and monitoring other aspects of their life carefully really helps, doesn't it?
Yes, yes. And nowadays, it's very easy to do because there's apps. You can actually get it on your cell phone. You can just put numbers on your cell phone and record the migraine, headache, duration, and then medication use. And then you can give it to your doctor as a printout. It's much easier than writing down every headache, so it just might be more work for the patient.
Well, you have a tremendous amount of information we're getting here. We're going to come back in the second half and continue to talk about headaches with Dr. Chang. Please stay with us, and we're at 802-244-1777. Welcome back to Healthcare Today. I'm Dr. Myers, and I'm speaking with Dr. Sinlin Thomas Chang, who's a neurologist at the Massachusetts General Hospital, and we're talking about headaches. Now, during the break, Dr. Chang, my producer, tells me that he is having an optical migraine. In other words, he is seeing some flashing lights out of one of his eyes. It's not accompanied by any other headache or nausea or any of the other symptoms you mentioned. What are optical migraines, and what can we do about them?
Yes. So we don't really use optical migraine term. We use retinal migraine or migraine with a retinal aura, which means the blood vessel in the eye that contribute to this. So there's a blood vessel in the eye that constrict and dilate, and it causing the symptoms of visual symptoms that only affect one eye. So that might not be associated with nausea, vomiting, but typically the swabbing headache on the same side of the eye. And the treatment was similar to the other migraines because the mechanism is similar. Preventive medications, if the headache frequency is greater than 4 headaches per month, and then abortive medications with migraine-specific medications when the headache happens. So that would be the strategy we use for treating this condition.
Let's talk about abortive medications, which means medications you would take once a migraine has started. Tell us about some of those.
Yes. There are new medication and old medications that have been ongoing for decades. The first migraine-specific medications approved in 1980s is working on the serotonin receptor called H5HT1B and 1D receptor. Lots of receptors on blood vessels in the brain and other blood in the other areas, but what happens is that the medication works on those receptors, and that can prevent the migraine from happening, so the vessel won't constrict, it won't dilate, and causing a headache. And that's typically the first migraine-specific medication. There are at least 7 of them available on the market. Those are pretty much the medication we frequently prescribe as first line for abortive medications.
Can you give the names of a few of these? Names.
Okay, so they are usually the name is they are called triptans. So the most commonly are sumatriptans or Imitrex. That's one of the first ones. There's also rizatriptans, romatriptans. There are some triptans that work longer, such as nalotriptans or So we prescribe those medications according to how long the migraine lasts and then how soon the migraine starts. So such as there are regimens for injections, which act faster. So for patients with migraine which get worse right away, the pills won't kick in before the migraine starts. And for those patients, we use the injectable regimen or nasal spray or the tablets that dissolve in the mouth to get a better absorption. So people with the longer-lasting migraines with the longer regimen, such as naltrexone, that would help cover the migraine and last more than 4 hours. So we treat a patient according to their migraine style.
So these have been, yeah, these were sort of a breakthrough medication for people who have migraines. There are some people, for example, who have very high blood pressure, have to be a bit concerned.
Yes, those are, just to say, those medications cause vasoconstrictions for people who already have a cardiovascular or cerebrovascular risk. Their blood vessels are really narrow, such as in their coronary artery, in their blood, the cerebral artery in the brain. Can increase the risk of stroke when that happens.
So if you already have known heart disease, this might be a medication you might want to avoid, but otherwise they've been very, very helpful.
Exactly.
There is a new category of medicine, I think it's called CGRP, and can you just talk very briefly about those, calcitonin gene-related peptide?
Yes, so CGRP or calcitonin gene-related peptide, those they are small molecules that also secreted by the nerve that work on the blood vessel in the brain. So they are typically associated with migraine, and so blocking those receptors or molecules in our brain will help reduce the chance of migraine. The good thing about CGRP blockers better than the traditional migraine medication is there's less likely to develop cardiac risk because the CGRP receptor in the heart is not as common as the serotonin receptors, which the other tryptans target. So less likely to cause cardiac side effects. Relatively speaking, it's safer to use for people with a cardiovascular risk. So that's something that we tend to use more and more often because of people, especially for older populations, they have other blood vessel or cardiovascular disease. Those are probably one of the first choice for headache abortive treatments.
So we have talked about tension headaches. We've talked about migraine headaches in terms of their prevalence and how we diagnose and treat them. There's something that, and I mentioned in my introduction, that the headaches can be from mild and annoying to life-threatening. There is a life-threatening type of headache, and it's called a thunderclap headache. Can you describe that and why it's such a medical emergency?
Yes. Thunderclap headache is typically people describe as the worst headache of their lives. Like a thunder. So pretty much like it can function and it just knock it out. Those kind of headaches is worrisome because this could commonly associate with cerebral aneurysm, the blood vessel dilatation structure in the brain that could burst and causing a deadly hemorrhage in the brain. So thunderclap headache is a warning sign and a red flag. Require immediate evaluation.
So I guess if you've gotten headaches before, if you get a completely new headache out of the blue and it's extremely rapid onset and extremely forceful headache, maybe associated with nausea or altered mental status, you absolutely have to be seen immediately.
Exactly. I would recommend that go to ER right away because this headache could be the warning signs that preceding the bleeding in the head.
Right.
That could be deadly, yes.
Let's talk about, just for a minute, one person had a question about video games, where, you know, children and adults spend a lot of time in front of their iPads or TVs or cell phones now. Has that contributed at all to headaches?
Yes, exactly. We've been seeing more and more teenagers or young adults, they have these issues. They spend a lot of time on the computer. They have increasing headache, also sensitive to the light, because they are, because of screen. A lot of these patients, they have a lot of posture issues. They don't really adjust their posturing when they have to work on the computer, playing games, and they tend to have a head forward posturing. They really concentrate on the screen, so they tend to tighten their neck and shoulder, and then even tighten their jaw, because the playing game is quite stressful. If you ever play those games with those kids, they are very stressful. So I guess I'm causing tension headache, you know, in one time. A lot of people cause migraine too, because both light and sometimes the noise could trigger the migraine.
Yeah.
So that's a very common condition. People have history of migraine or tension type of headache. They have more headache after they play games or work on computer for too long. It's been more and more since COVID. People stay home most of the time and doing those computer activities, they have more headache. That's very common.
That's a good take-home message. Trigeminal neuralgia. Can you, because I know you're also involved with neuropathic pain in your clinic. Can you talk a little bit about trigeminal neuralgia? What is that?
Yes, it is a very severe pain, a stagnant pain on the face. That's where the trigeminal nerve goes. We actually, MGH, we have a new patient pain program targeting this condition. Because this is a very devastating. I would say it's more devastating than migraine, because in migraine, you can still go to bed. But if you have this, neuralgia, it's like a knife poking on your face. Every time you talk, you smile, you do move anything on your face or even chew, that will kill you. So that's really, really devastating condition. So those are something really require aggressive treatment to maintain lifestyle.
Yeah, I think we've also seen statistics that it is actually a risk factor for suicide. The pain is so consistent and so severe with some forms of trigeminal neuralgia. So what do you do for a patient with trigeminal neuralgia when they come to your clinic? By the way, can you just explain what the nerves that are involved in trigeminal neuralgia?
Yeah, the trigeminal nerve is the biggest nerve that goes to your from the cranial nerve. So they are nerve coming out of the brain. Trigeminal nerve is the biggest one because it's a part of our face. And our face is very sensitive area, which is a lot of sensory fibers for a lot of different functions. This nerve has three branches. That's called trigeminal. Three branches that go to the upper, middle, and lower face. That responsible for sensory and some motor functions. A trigeminal neuralgia typically involves the middle and lower half of the face. So that's an uncommon condition, but very devastating condition.
So how can you help people who come to you with trigeminal neuralgia?
Yeah, different from migraine, trigeminal neuralgia require a multidisciplinary approach. So because it could require surgery, and then, oral dental procedures, medications, physical therapies. A lot of people, as you said, require psychological therapy intervention because it's quite stressful to have that condition. So we have a team at Mass General. We have a group which we meet regularly to discuss patients with this condition because that require different specialties. So we really learn a lot from each other how to treat this condition.
Mm-hmm. The headaches too. Well, I'm going to go back to regular headaches for a minute.
Yes.
People who are particularly people who are older, over 50. You mentioned a new headache is a red flag, and you did mention sometimes it can be the result of a tumor growing. How often does that happen?
Brain tumor. Depends on tumor type, the prevalence is different. In general, it's more increased in the over 50. Also people with family histories that also increase risk. So that's something. If you have a headache associated with a focal neurological deficits, such as weakness, numbness, trouble talking, and then or language issues, that need to be seen with doctors right away and to have a scan. So we don't want to miss people with a brain tumor.
What kind of scans do you order?
We can start with a CT of the head, and then maybe MRI, to determine the location of the tumor, and then also maybe we can determine the type of tumors. Many times the tumor need to require a biopsy to determine the type, because the risk for mortality is really based on the type. Even though 70% of the tumors in the brain are benign, but there's really nothing benign in the brain, because even benign tumor can compress the brain, causing fatality. So every tumor need to be paid attention to.
Going back to neuropathic pain, there's something called complex regional pain syndrome, or CRPS for short. Can you talk a little bit about that? Do you treat that in your clinic, and what causes that?
Complex regional pain syndrome is a really difficult condition to treat. You can divide it by two types. One is a type without nerve damage. The other type is with nerve damage. You know, it could happen on any kind of injury, sometimes even no injury. So the symptoms typically involve one limb to begin with. Suddenly, the limb or arm become painful, tender to touch, and swollen, and change color, and sensitive to the temperatures. Those typically is the beginning symptoms. And over time, could involve the whole limb or go to the contralateral limbs. So extend to different limbs. Sometimes even to the head. So that's a devastating condition. The mechanism for this condition is still not very clear, but it's a theory about this is it's from the hyperactivity of the sympathetic system. So this condition used to be called reflex sympathetic dystrophy, or ISD. Since we have changed naming, because we don't quite sure how much sympathetic system involved in this condition. That's why we changed it to complex regional pain syndrome, because of the complexity of this condition. And the treatment is also depends on the type of injury patient have. And then there's medication treatments, procedures, injections, there's even physical therapy treatments, and then eventually they could benefit from like spinal cord stimulation or even motor cortex stimulation. So there's different level of treatments according to the patient's symptoms and then respond to the therapeutic approach.
I think one of the messages I'm hearing is that for these, whether it's headaches or other neuropathic type injuries or illnesses, that it's multifactorial in terms often of the cause, but also multifactorial in terms of the treatments, that there's no one specific treatment for a lot of these conditions, but that it takes a team of specialists at times and different kinds of treatments.
Yes, we typically approach this with different angles, looking for different risk factors and the therapeutic approaches to get best results. So in our experience, only treat one kind of pill is not unlikely to achieve the best outcome, because there are multiple factors, not just physically, but could be psychologically, social, economically, and then involve. So we need to approach that as well. To get best results.
I think for patients and their primary care providers who are under great time pressure these days, often don't have the kind of time perhaps they used to have decades ago to sit and talk with patients. If patients come in with headaches which simply are not resolving or becoming chronic and debilitating, that seeing a team such as at Mass General may be a really helpful, even if you just go for an initial evaluation, and then they can then recommend treatments back to the primary care provider or the community neurologist. It may be a very helpful thing to do.
Yes, at Mass General, we have groups, experts from different departments. We work together closely. We discuss cases, especially difficult cases, to determine the best treatment approach for these patients. so that we can get a best result. That's something that an advantage of being a Mass General, has this kind of environment to help us help the patient.
Now, I'll just take a minute. You're obviously grew up in Taipei or part of China and began your studies there. How would headaches would they present any differently there, and would they be treated any differently in Taipei today than they are in this country? In particular, I wanted to ask about acupuncture, which is been present in China for millennia.
I have both backgrounds in the Eastern and Western medicine. I grew up with the Eastern culture, and that contained many treatments such as acupuncture, herbal regimens, and I'm actually also an acupuncturist, trained back home, and also I did acupuncture therapy in USA as well. So my approach is this: we need to combine the good part of Eastern and Western medicine together to reach the best result. So that's why at Mass General we also have an integrative medicine center. We tend to do a holistic approach. We send patients to the wellness center in Chelsea. They have an acupuncture service, and we also refer patients to a MyBody approach for MyBody medicines. So those are things we think is the best therapeutic approach for patients with headache or stress.
Well, you may have just given us a future topic for this show, integrative health. Have you used acupuncture on some of your patients?
Yes. I was in Michigan for 7 years before I came here. Over there, I have an acupuncture practice in my clinic in the University of Michigan, which we use acupuncture for headache patients. I was able to use acupuncture to replace the medication treatments for patients, such as women try to get pregnant, they cannot take most of the medications because of side effects or affecting on the fetus. Acupuncture will be able to help them during pregnancies. And then also acupuncture could be helpful for people who have incredible headache from medication, or people cannot take medications because of other medical issues. Acupuncture also is a good approach for patients with psychological conditions, stress conditions. It's a good thing to help people to adjust their, relax their bodies, try to recover from the stress or accidents they suffered from before, and to get best results. Many times I use combination for acupuncture with medications to help patients and achieve best result. If I do the combinations, patients don't require a high dose of medication that could cause them side effects. So in the combination of both, typically reach a better result just taking the medication alone.
Well, I think it's a fascinating combination that you bring to your practice based on your training and your developmental and where you grew up. And I think the whole concept of a team approach at Mass General, as Mass General has, for example, is very important. Some of these conditions we've talked about are truly chronic, and they're not necessarily going to be solved in one visit or in one with one medication. I want to thank our guest, Dr. Sinlin Thomas Chang at Mass General, and I would like to invite you to join us next week on Healthcare Today. Until then, be kind to yourselves. Please be kind to others.